We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Now guys, it's the middle of the Comedy Festival and I don't want to take you away from seeing all of the excellent Comedy Festival shows that you are no doubt out there seeing. Maybe you're listening to this while walking between shows and I appreciate that, but we're going to make this real quick. So this episode is brought to you by International Day of Human Spaceflight. Celebrating man's escaping from his planetary prison by hurling himself into the depths of the cold embrace of Father Space. Searching for a place free from the pollution and destruction of man, only for us to leave a whole bunch of space junk behind every time we go out into the black void. And that goes double from when we visit another moon or planet. And this is likely why, if you're ever wondering, we've never been visited by aliens. See, the moon is full of space junk that we left there, like the lunar lander, the moon buggies, golf balls, a little hammer and a feather. And of course, we couldn't forget the 96 bags of poop that we left up there. Yep, Neil Armstrong and friends left 96 bags of poop on the moon. Now, sure, this was by necessity, but think about it. So there's most likely a house in your local area with like an old abandoned fridge or washing machine or just a couple of things out in the front yard, right? Maybe an abandoned car, something like that. You never go visiting that house. The local kids, they steer clear of that house. There's just a vibe about that house that is unsettling. It never gets door knockers. That front yard, the moon, right? That's our front yard. Now we are the house in the neighbourhood with the messy front yard. We've got an old car in it. And we've got, you know, some junk that we left behind, except we've also got 96 bags of poop just lying around. That's gross. Don't just leave your poop lying around in space. Put it in a plastic bag, collect it, and then launch it back towards the Earth so that it will burn up in the atmosphere. It is the responsible way to visit the moon. Now this episode is also brought to you by my run of my storytelling and stand-up show, Wage Against the Machine, in the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. I'm around halfway through the run at the moment, and the tickets on the Thursday to Sunday shows are actually pay what you can, just like they do at the Edinburgh Fringe for large portions of it. It runs on a pay what you can model. You come down, you watch the show, you give what you think the show is worth, or you give what you can afford to give to the show. I would appreciate you coming out and checking out the show. I just think in these tough times, it's really hard to lock down any number of shows. So if you're willing to take more of a chance by paying less, I'm more than happy to have you come along. So please do come check it out. I will also be bringing Wage Against the Machine to the Sydney Comedy Festival on May 4th and May 5th at the Enmore Laneway. And of course, don't forget, later in the year, I've been helping produce a play called The Platypus, which I've been working on with Francis Greenslade, who you probably know from Mad as Hell. And it'll be at Theatre Works as part of the 2024 Theatre Works season. It is running from roughly June 19th until about July 9th. It's a great one. It's really interesting and fascinating piece written by Francis. And I really hope that you find time to come and check out one of these projects. But until then, guys, I will be the bearer of weird news. Now let's start with the headlines. Seems Labor will require companies who want government contracts to meet gender equity targets. Because it's 2024, guys, and it's time that women were given the chance to prove that they can be corrupted by the endless money tap of businesses receiving government funding to do or not do work as they see fit. Our numbers of females disgraced by public funding scandals are disgustingly low. Gladys Berejiklian is currently doing the lion's share of the lifting, and we can get better representation than Gladys. Come on, guys, it's time to lift up. In maybe the least surprising move in history, abortion has been enshrined as a constitutional right in France. Because of course it has. France is the horniest country that there has ever been. They're so horny that their national monument is a giant phallus. They're so horny, even their kissing involves some kind of penetration. They're so horny that they pull out less than Napoleon Bonaparte. Moving on, Clive Palmer is back attempting to overcome his own personal iceberg, that is, his Titanic replica. He's gonna give it a third crack, if you can believe. And why not? It's not like the Titanic was a giant symbol of human hubris or the inability of man to defeat oncoming nature, while the class divide and social inequality causes the working class to die while the rich get to safety. Feels like something we should definitely focus an abundance of our time trying to replicate. Really, it makes sense. After all, the Titanic's major predator, icebergs, have all but been wiped out at this point. It's long past time to allow these domesticated Titanics to return to their natural habitat. Meta has announced that it will stop paying Australian publishers for news and plans to shut down its news tab in Australia and the United States, really pissing off local news outlets. While I'm generally happy about anything that pisses off the Murdoch empire, I also don't want Facebook to have an extra $30 million to fuck around with. It's really a big rock and a hard place situation, you know? I don't know who I'm angrier at in terms of problematic billionaires. I am, however, looking forward to the announcement of the Murdoch slash Zuckerberg cage match, the battle of the right-wing sting, the tear into the nonagenarian, it's beat the press, because that's how rich people solve their problems these days, apparently. They just get into a ring and they start fighting, or at least they announce that they're going to start fighting. Probably never followed through, which is the most disappointing part of all of this. A Toronto-based company that analyzes canine DNA is in the doghouse after an investigative reporter sent her own DNA in, only to be told that she is 40% Alaskan Malamute. I mean, if you're gonna find out you're a manimal, Alaskan Malamute is a pretty good dog to be. I mean, after you could have found out that you are 100% human, that would have been really disappointing news. The United States and six other major world powers have warned Iran not to provide ballistic missiles to Russia to aid in the war against Ukraine, threatening to retaliate if it does. The US continued saying, "Hey, arming dictators is our job. You back the fuck up." Supermarket shelves are depleted of soft drinks because of a shortage of carbon dioxide. And you know who I blame? Trees. Guzzling up all the CO2 and making life-giving oxygen, who do they think they are? This is why we started burning the planet from the inside out, so that we could have plenty of CO2, so we don't have to die without being able to drink some water with bubbles in it, maybe some sparkling water, or a can of Coke is sitting in our bunker. Is that too much to ask? Just a single can of Coke while the world burns. However, Sky News hosts have volunteered to do their part to help during the CO2 shortage by talking a lot more shit than usual. So that's all the headlines for today. We're on to the bigger news now, starting with chocolate news. So by now, you have no doubt heard about the infamous Glasgow Experience, aka Willy's Chocolate Experience, a name that really reeks of, but we have a Willy Wonka chocolate factory at home, and really delivered on that very basic premise. For those of you who somehow missed this or have rightly purged it from your brains, Willy's Chocolate Experience was an unlicensed event based on Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It was held in Glasgow, and the organisers advertised it as an immersive and interactive family experience. The promotional website stated that the experience would have dreamlike AI-generated images. And it was like many dreams that I have had in that it made no sense and bore little resemblance to any form of reality that it was supposed to be reflecting. The children who showed up to this chocolate experience were greeted by what is the best way to put it,
like an empty rubbish warehouse with nothing in it.
Yeah, that's it. Nailed it. Really nailed it. So they walked through the...
like an empty rubbish warehouse with nothing in it.
Which contained a bouncy castle, an AI-generated backdrop, which was entirely too small, and enough plastic lollipops to choke a school of fish when they are inevitably thrown into the trash. And in which children were given, you guessed it, a single jelly bean and half cup of lemonade. Wait, so no chocolate at all? Fair enough. Why would I expect any chocolate at, what was it called again? Willy's legally distinct but close enough to fool you chocolate experience. I don't know what they were expecting. When I looked at the information on the website, I saw what they promised. It says here, cat gaching, live performances, Karchi tunes, ex-Asadi lollipops, and a paradise of sweet teats. I mean, it says it all, doesn't it? You really should have known right from then and there. It sounds like thumb for the whole firm of it. And did they ever get what they were promised? Well, you better believe it. As AI-generated scripts introduced us to the newest addition to the legally distinct Willy's Chocolate Family Experience, the Unknown, who is an evil chocolatier who lives inside the walls, who actually did an excellent job scaring the children.
It's that! It's the Unknown!
And I will tell you from experience, as someone who has worked in my fair share of terrible, immersive walkthrough experiences, they don't all go down this well. Some of us get kicked in the chest by an adorable 12-year-old who will then dutifully report they kicked you in the chest to the person at the front of house because they are worried that they're going to get in trouble. But while my ghost houses also didn't contain chocolate, nobody was given any jello beans for getting scared. So, if anything, these kids were better off. Now, Willy's chocolate experience was so terrible that ticket holders called the police to the scene, harnessing the power of white people complaining, but this time, for good. The public demanded refunds, and the event was compared to the infamous Fyre Festival, which advertised as a once-in-a-lifetime musical experience, and delivered a multiple-times-in-a-lifetime being-ripped-off-by-greedy-capitalists experience. I will say this in defense of the Fyre Festival, and that's a statement you'll never hear again. It did actually deliver on that exact promise. It was a once-in-a-lifetime musical experience. There has never been a musical experience like it before or since. Not even the infamous 2022 Splendor in the Mud Festival or Woodstock 99. And this chocolate experience is also a once-in-a-lifetime chocolate experience. And a one-of-a-million multiple-times-in-a-lifetime being ripped off by greedy capitalists experience. It can be both things at the same time, okay? And look, without giving this shyster any credit that he doesn't deserve, maybe, just maybe, all the children who experienced this firsthand should take this as a learning moment. Or the parents can treat it as a teaching moment. They can learn about the dangers of capitalism and to stand together to destroy the remnants of exploitative capitalism. Stand tall and throw off the yoke of exploitation. Unlikely that that's what he actually intended, sure, but this is something that they can say they actually walked away with. But what everyone is missing is this really is a true representation of the Willy Wonka experience, but not from Charlie's perspective, where everything went well. No. This is from the other children's perspective. Think about it. A bunch of children were sent into a warehouse where they were promised a lifetime of chocolate and instead encountered a bunch of workers that they couldn't comprehend doing things that made sense only to those workers. At the whims of a factory owner who was standoffish to the outside world and whose creation disappointed a bunch of parents and left some children with experiences that they'll carry with them for the rest of their lives. That sounds exactly like the experiences of the other children at the Wonka Factory experience. The UK's Channel 5 will release a one-off documentary titled Willy Wonka, the Scandal That Rocked Britain. And, rocked Britain? Look, okay, calm down. Just calm your farm, Channel 5. Rocked Britain? I mean, okay, for starters, it was in Glasgow. One town, and only one town, that, if I'm being generous, large chunks of Britain would be so quick to shit on whenever given the chance. But come now, rocked Britain? Come on, I know that we're all seeking more eyeballs, but this is an oversell that reeks of desperation at the best of times. Actually, the documentary appears to be offering up an overhyped experience that can't possibly live up to the hype of its promotion in order to exploit the most amount of money from that situation being ripping off of families and making children sad. I'd also say exploiting actors, but at this point that's pretty much par for the course. Actors get fucked over all the time in the arts industry. They kind of knew what they were getting into when they signed on to this in the first place. This
like an empty rubbish warehouse with nothing in it.
In chocolate news closer to home, we're going over to Tasmania, the last bastion of the Liberal Party. As Tasmanian Premier and drowning man looking for a straw to grasp onto, Jeremy Rockcliffe has vowed to build the world's largest chocolate fountain if he was re-elected. Good thing 51% of Tasmanian households aren't experiencing food insecurity, and Tasmania isn't the state with the highest level of poverty in Australia, or else all this talk of chocolate fountains might seem like a desperate, gaudy distraction, which it totally isn't. I mean, come on! After all, Rockcliffe has committed $12 million to this chocolate experience. Wait. Chocolate experience? Looks like we're ramping up to build Jeremy's Chocolate Experience! Is this how we plan to make money in Tasmania, overcharging Australian families for terrible underfunded experience that leave them disappointed in the delivery? Oh, wait, so it's just business as usual in Tasmania then, damn it. Thought we were onto something. Rockcliffe has bragged the fountain would be the greatest thing to happen to tourism since Mona, an art gallery with a tattooed man, an exhibition that contains mold, and a machine that generates poop. Hitting the heights of tourism. To be fair, they are destroying all their forests and wildlife, so they will only have Mona. And now that they've made the mistake of voting the Liberals in again, this fountain. Oh, and the spirit of Tasmania. I mean, it's not a tourist hotspot for people, but for some reason, people really fucking love cruises. Rockcliffe said that the government would kick in $12 million to make the chocolate experience a reality, including $2 million to help the design and planning, and another $2 million for early site work, and then $8 million for unspecified activities if agreed milestones were met. Now, there's a nice clean way of describing money I'll be embezzling. I'll be remembering that description for my next grant application. Money for unspecified activities if agreed milestones are met. Fucking vague, very good, very vague. There was also a secret $2 million earmarked for rounding up Oompa Loompas to work for free, and another $2 million for figuring out devious ways to punish children for the crime of being children, albeit very annoying children. It is unclear whether the public would be able to taste Tasmania's proposed chocolate fountain or what sort of food safety regulations the proposal would have to meet. Presumably the first rule would be that the chocolate must never be touched by human hands. The second rule would be you don't talk about Oompa Loompa Fight Club. And the third rule, well, it's really more of a guideline than a rule. They will have to regulate the levels of traumatic horror in the unnecessary tunnel of evil images that you have to travel through in order to get to the chocolate fountain. Moving on now, it is gun news. So obviously this isn't a local news story, as we gave up our freedom years ago to the tyranny of knowing that our children can go to school without getting shot. And our nation has never recovered since. But one group of heroes who's gone out of their way to ensure they stay committed to liberty and never give in to the kind of tyranny we've allowed to overrun this nation, the increasingly ironically named United States of America. What better way to express their freedom than by firing their not even slightly fought for guns into the air in revelry, then into a shopping center, in revelry, into a school, in revelry, into a cinema, in revelry, from a window of a hotel, in revelry, a nightclub, in revelry, a church, in revelry, basically anywhere where there are people that they will hear the sound of freedom and revelry. But all this freedom isn't as free as they first thought. See, after James Crumbly, the father of the Michigan school shooter, was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter, a second conviction against the teen's parents, whose mother was also charged back in February, who was accused of failing to secure a gun at home and doing nothing to address acute signs of his mental turmoil. I mean, the audacity of America punishing someone for inaction on guns in the face of obvious red flags is staggering. Their whole approach to gun safety is a bigger red flag than the parade for the 70th anniversary of the Communist Party. It's worth noting this decision was made by a jury, and these parents have become the first US parents to be charged for a mass school shooting committed by their child, raising the prospect that parents of future school shooters will also face trial in American courts. You can read all about this in Needless Scapegoat Magazine's Back to School Shootings special. And you know their motto, anybody will do in a pinch. It's a win-win, really. Politicians get to pass the buck and not take action on gun safety. Although Michigan did not have a storage law at the time, Crumbly still had a legal duty to protect others from possible harm by his son, at least according to prosecutors. With Donald Trump as the frontrunner for the Republican nominee, I don't know that holding a father accountable for their children's actions is in the best interest of this potential upcoming government. We've all seen Donald Trump's kids in action. I wouldn't want to be held accountable for any of those future lawsuits. Country prosecutor Karen McDonald told the jury, James Crumbly is not on trial for what his son did. To which a very delighted Trump blew an exasperated sigh of relief. She continued, James Crumbly is on trial for what he did and for what he didn't do. He doesn't get a pass because somebody else actually pulled the trigger. Now, the verdicts in the Crumbly parents' case, based on the allegations of negligence and foreseeability, likely will be used by prosecutors in future cases, creating what we like to call a precedent. Not just for court cases either. This will set a new precedent for politicians seeking to blame but not seeking to take action. And you better believe that we will be draining that well dry in the near future. This is a whole fresh source of responsibility shifting. Not since the heady first days of thoughts and prayers have we been able to shift so many units of blame and take so little responsibility? But no longer do we have to rely on thoughts and prayers to solve the gun problem. We may even be able to retire it once and for all. We can now simply blame the parents and throw them all in jail. And sure, these parents were negligent. They definitely could have solved this problem before it escalated. But if we're doing this really and truly, then we need to bring it to its logical conclusion. Already, some people are looking to blame the school, and there potentially is some blame to be laid there, to be sure. But we can do better than that. We can go higher. We can escalate this to the point of irritation, disruption, and to its logical end point. If a parent or a school can be held responsible for the actions of a school shooter due to their own inaction, then logically, this responsibility needs to be upshifted to the NRA, who have lobbied Congress for years. Oh, and the politicians and Congress that continuously failed to pass meaningful gun regulation every year since 1994, although occasionally some states will make it slightly worse, so that does count as change. It's not positive change, but it still does count as change, I guess. Gun violence costs thousands of lives per year. Beyond mass shootings, and the easy availability of guns has ripple effects, spreading trauma across communities of all demographics. Now, I can see why you don't want to have public health care, America. It makes sense to me. All of it would be used up treating gun wounds. Over 200 mass shootings a year definitely put some holes in the old piggy bank. And some buildings and some people and some other stuff, but that's a moot point. It costs a lot to patch up the holes in 20 school kids, especially when the medical institutions are overcharging for every product on the market. So, if anything, I guess this is, like, weird good economics. Now, this poor father was accused of doing nothing to address acute signs of his son's mental turmoil. And I don't know him. Maybe he did. But seriously, America, come here. What are you doing? Come here. Are you trying to make it look like you aren't a real country? Because you're doing a damn good job. Oh, you think this guy ignored acute signs of mental turmoil? That's your whole MO, America. Do we have a clip?
Bing, bing. I love it. I love it. I'm sitting there tweeting, bing, bing, bing. You press a button, bing, bing. They all hand you checks, bing, 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 bing. We had our beautiful Marine standing there, bing, 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 bing.
You know, in the old days, bing, bong.
You know, with the map, bing, bing, bing.
Little mouth on him, bing, 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 bing.
Bing, 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 they're cleaning up.
Fix it up, bing, bing, bing.
A 14-point plan, bing, bing, bing.
Anthony Weiner, you know, the little bing, bing, bing.
Yeah, there's always a clip. Looks like a man in some kind of mental turmoil, at least some sort of cognitive decline, and everyone is ignoring it, even waiting to give him the most important job in the country again. Now, what was his take on guns again? Can we just...
Can I promise you this? With me at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, no one will lay a finger on your firearms, just as took place for 4 years when I was your president. I will uphold those glorious words, shall not be infringed.
Well, that doesn't sound like a man who takes the gun problem seriously. Not that it's just him, mind you. All of them in there need to learn their choices have consequences. And the only consequences they care about are the ones that impact them directly. I mean, look how hard Trump is working to become president now that he has many legal problems. I don't think I've seen him work so hard on anything before. And may this pursuit, like so many in his life, end in failure. All I want is some people in power to see consequences. Is that so much to ask? He asked, knowingly. Moving on now, it is spy news. Spies! Aww, do we ever love us some spies? We write movies about them and books, and we turn them into movies and TV shows and comics and video games and radio dramas and parodies of films and parodies of books and parodies of TV shows and parodies of cartoons and parodies of video games, but not parodies of radio plays. We never parody radio plays. But the rest of it, we love it. Seems the one place we don't like to put spies is in our government. Though we love them in other people's governments, so that does seem like a bit of proper hypocrisy right there. Hypocrisy? From the government? No way! Yes way. Sorry to break your illusions about your government. Big hypocrites. And spies were in the news recently as the Director General of ASIO and Discount Mike from Breaking Bad, Mike Burgess, outlined the details of this spying case in his annual threat assessment this year. A spy? In the Parliament? How intriguing! So, what exactly do we know? Well, seems Burgess was very careful and guarded in his language when describing the politician. All we know is that they're a retired politician who was recruited several years ago by a group of foreign spies from an unnamed country. So, let me get this right. Someone in Parliament has been working with a foreign power to undermine the integrity of the Australian Parliament. There might not be a lot of detail here, but we here at the Bearer of Weird News think we have enough information to work out who this was. So we've narrowed it down to the Liberal Party. They are constantly working with foreign media mogul Rupert Murdoch with the intention of making things worse in Australia for anyone who isn't them or one of their donors. Even occasionally making things worse for their own voters. Why not? Shits and giggles. It's pretty fun. You'd think that they'd at least try to look after them, but it's always been easier to trick people into hating the other guy than to do anything to actually improve the world. Improvement? That's a fool's game. But we can't say for sure, as Burgess is being very tight-lipped about the identity of the spy, simply saying ASIO has blown the cover of the Foreign Intelligence Unit, codenamed the A-Team, which was targeting Australians who had access to privileged information for several years. The A-Team unit successfully recruited the politician in question, and I pity the fool who got suckered by a foreign spy ring. Before we get too far into this, it's important that you know, according to ASIO, the former politician cannot be charged under our current laws. And it's not for the usual reasons that politicians never get charged for anything. You know, all the corruption and self-serving law passing. No, 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 none of that. Actually, in order to prosecute, a dossier of evidence had to be put together by the Australian Federal Police, not ASIO. Oh, I see, I see, I see. So, they can actually be prosecuted, just not by ASIO. And presumably the Federal Police are rushing to put together a dossier any minute now so that it can charge this foreign spy. Any minute now. I'm sure it'll arrive any moment now. Now I know that you don't normally go after the politicians, but this guy is out of power. So go nuts, Federal Police, go nuts. Just like you did with the ABC that one time. Burgess has been doing a bunch of interviews on the matter, and in one he dropped this sassy little zinger saying, "Several individuals should be grateful that the espionage and foreign interference laws are not retrospective." Isn't it great when, like, we all just inherently know that the state and the political system is so corrupt that any number of our politicians could go down for corruption charges, and instead of cleaning up the system, we just, like, laugh about it in interviews with our chief intelligence agency, we make some jokes, and we all walk away shaking our head being like, that's just politics, nothing we can do about it. Oh, if only we had the power to vote or something like that. Oh well, back to toiling. Oh, those silly politicians and all their corruption. What can you do? Former Federal Treasurer Joe Hockey said this was unacceptable as it allows traitors to be forgiven and walk off into the sunset, demanding the traitor be unmasked like he's the mayor in a Batman comic. We must unmask this vigilante who takes our safety into his own hands and acts so irresponsibly. Not only because he thinks his integrity has been impugned by this lack of identification, but because he believes his reputation is still intact. Isn't that cute? No, Hockey, mate, no. We remember that political donors in the North Sydney Forum were able to have VIP meetings with you. A story that was printed under the title, Treasurer for Sale. So no need to worry about your reputation there, champ. Can't smear a Jackson Pollock, okay? Burgess has not revealed the level of government, federal, state, or local, where the former politician served, nor the political party or the gender of the person involved, amid a round of speculation about who it could be. Though the odds of it being a woman, I mean, come on. In this day and age, in this government, realistically, this is a man. And if it does turn out to be a woman, well, if I'm honest with you, I'm just glad to see women are being afforded equal opportunities to sell out their country and are just as represented as men in this burgeoning field of corruption. Why are traitorous Australians able to walk off into the sunset under our current espionage laws? Good question, I'm glad you asked. In short, it would be highly unusual to prosecute someone under any criminal law that did not exist when they committed the act. Look, I see what you're saying, but surely being a spy has been illegal since forever. Anybody? Can I get like some confirmation on this, please? Am I imagining things? What's that? The UN Charter from 1945 establishes some of the most basic principles that govern modern international laws, and Article 2, Subsection 4 establishes the principle of non-intervention, unless... See, here's the thing. Spying in peacetime, it's kind of hard to define, apparently. And so it's hard to convict someone of espionage for that reason. However, the legal status of wartime espionage, well, that is less certain. International humanitarian law does not declare espionage outright illegal. See, here is the reason that we are constantly blowing up other countries in secret wars. All the countries are reliant on spies and espionage and legally questionable actions. So we need to keep at war so that we can protect our assets. Keep the world in perpetual war and its wartime rules all the time. It's hats off, baby! Anything goes! The rules are different when we're in war, and we're always in war somewhere. So the rules are always different all the time. Honestly, I think this is the reason America has any friends at all. They're the friend of the beach house. If they have the beach house, then none of us need to have our own beach house. We just need to use their beach house. And in this case, the beach house is a secret bunker full of nuclear bombs, unfettered ambition, and a freezer full of heads of some dictators and a few democratically elected leaders who they just didn't like. And occasionally we're like, can we use the beach house? And they're like, yeah, you can come over and use the beach house. And what happens at the beach house stays at the beach house, unless you want to end up in the freezer as well, you hear me? Unless you want to end up in the freezer as well. And And finally, guys, it's capitalism for breakfast news. Breakfast is the most important corporate propaganda of the day. The cost of living crisis is looming behind every decision that we make. For us, the consumers, it means excruciatingly examining our every decision on how best to use the scant few dollars that we have left to us. For the companies, it means excruciatingly examining every aspect of the business on how best to extract the few scant dollars that we have left to us, so that it can become theirs. And boy, are they getting creative. Sorry, no, the other thing, what's the word I'm looking for? It's less creative and more overt. That's it. Overt was the word I was searching for. So on that note, the CEO of Kellogg's has decided that it was a good and not at all tone-deaf idea to suggest to cash-strapped consumers that they should consider cereal as an option for dinner. Yes, this is still the same Kellogg's that was founded by Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, notorious moralizer and man who was so determined to make the world a boring place that he tried to invent a food so bland Americans would stop masturbating. That is a true thing that you can definitely look up. Presumably because they'd lose the joy in living after their lives transformed into sexless, joyless slabs of purposeless existence, where they talk about the weather or types of grass, their collection of rare and anomalous buttons, the benefits of buying a 5-year subscription to Plain Oat magazine, and bang on about the joys of eating grains. I mean, who could blame them? Kellogg's made a meal so bad and unnaturally tough for a breakfast cereal that they often cracked people's teeth. All they had left was the satisfying mush of a bowl of breakfast gruel and oats because they didn't have teeth left to chew the delicious food. Harvey Kellogg, he was a weird dude, and I cannot emphasize this enough. But back to the present. With grocery prices surging by 25% over the past 4 years, these companies suggest that traditional dinner options could take a back seat to the more unconventional choices like Frosted Flakes and Dorito casseroles. Oof, even Pepsi's CEO encouraged is a loose word here for what is happening. Mercilessly mocked struggling Gen Zers under the guise of giving life advice, I think that's the more accurate description, telling them to explore creative culinary uses for snacks like Doritos and rolled gold pretzels, suggesting they can serve those as side dishes and ingredients in meals. Delicious. Never mind that these foods are high in calories, fat, sodium, which can contribute to weight gain and increase the risk of health problems, such as high blood pressure and heart disease if consumed in excess, and heart disease is the number one killer globally. You'd be better off eating instant noodles with a side of human flesh as a meal supplement than regularly eating Doritos as part of your dinner. At least the dementia brought on by the Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease that you develop means that you won't be cognitive of the ongoing slide into the capitalist hellscape that you've fallen into, and you can die blissfully unaware. At this point, the companies will just say that they are helping you out by raising prices and forcing you to eat increasingly poorly, because companies are also mostly responsible for the destruction of the environment and aren't going to do anything to fix that. So when you eat poorly, you live a shorter life and you'll spend less time suffering as a blood bag for a billionaire like Peter Thiel in the Mad Max desert of the post-apocalypse inevitable future that is coming. Kellogg's CEO Gary Pilnick is fronting this rebranding of cereal as economical and versatile.
The cereal category has always been quite affordable, and it tends to be a great destination when consumers are under pressure. So some of the things that we're doing is, first, messaging. We got to reach the consumer where they are. So we're advertising about cereal for dinner. If you think about the cost of cereal for a family versus what they might otherwise do, that's going to be much more affordable.
When asked if he thought this idea was Fruit Loops, and that maybe he and the Kellogg's board of directors were acting a little banana wackies, he said...
But the idea of having cereal for dinner, is there the potential for that to land the wrong way?
We don't think so.
Oh, that was a long pause. Feels like you weren't really as prepared for that question as you really should have been. Gary?
We don't think so. In fact, it's landing really well right now, Carl. When we look at all of our data, of course we would know that breakfast cereal is the number one choice for in-home consumption. We understand that for breakfast. It turns out that over 25% of our consumption is outside the breakfast occasion. A lot of it's at dinner, and that occasion continues to grow.
Oh, the breakfast for dinner occasion continues to grow, does it? Let me help you out there, champ. Let me just rephrase that for you the same way that you're trying to rephrase breakfast as a dinner solution. Let's see. Yep, got it.
But the idea of having cereal for dinner, is there the potential for that to land the wrong way?
Yes, almost immediately. But we are rich and out of touch, and we'd like to stay that way. So if poor people could just get on board with being poor, and if you're sick of cereal, well, you can visit one of the many food banks that we donate our excess profits to and pick yourself up a little snack, just a little treat from the food bank. Look, guys, cereal for dinner isn't even a good breakfast dinner option. It'd actually be much cheaper to batch cook pancakes from scratch. I can at least store them in the freezer and heat them up another day. If I turn my head to face away from a cereal bowl, by the time I turn back, the cereal has actually absorbed all the milk and turned into some sort of breakfast-grade sugar gruel concrete. Not to mention that Pancake Parlor charges $20 to eat pancakes for dinner. So now I can do it at home for just a few cents per pancake. I'm actually saving money by eating pancakes for dinner. But ultimately, here is the Bearer of Weird News list of things that are better to eat for dinner than cereal. You ready? A pay rise. They say money can't buy you happiness, but it can buy you dinner. So maybe we'll start with offering people a pay rise for dinner. Week-old leftovers that are starting to have a bit of a funny smell. Now, there might be a risk of food poisoning, but it's still better than shoveling your propaganda down my throat for dinner. Just porridge. Like nothing else, just plain porridge. Porridge is a much healthier alternative than cereal. And you can just, like, eat it warm. That'd be pretty good. It'd be, like, so much better than a bowl of cereal. Or maybe we could scoop spoonfuls of Vegemite into our mouths. It'd taste like shit, but it would at least be healthier than eating cereal for breakfast. I get some much-needed vitamin B. And then there is always the flesh of the owning class, washed down with a cup of tears collected as we slowly shaved chunks off them, as they looked up at us asking, "Why don't you have enough already?" And we simply looked down and replied, "We've been asking you that for years." And that is the end of the episode. Thanks for hanging around. Thanks for listening. I thought it got a little darker there at the end there, but I appreciate your time and appreciate you hanging around. Remember, the best way to support the podcast is definitely to come out to the live shows. But if you cannot do that, please do sign up to the Patreon. And that is patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff. We get all of our bonus episodes on the Patreon. Oh, sorry, all of our bonus stories go on the Patreon. Every episode has a bonus story. And this one's a bit of a fun one. Some extra art news for you guys. So if you want to hear the art news, go over to the Patreon. Until then, we'll see you next time. Bye. Please come out and see the show.